our speaker for quite some time. He carries a powerful AA message. I first had the privilege of hearing him some 3 years ago when he spoke at Hickory Hills' 20-year anniversary. We were very enlightened. I've had the distinct pleasure of hosting our speaker tonight, this weekend, and I feel I can truly call him a friend. From the Bellflower Group, the Bellflower Big Book Group, I want to get that right, Donnie. I don't want to mess that up. Of Long Beach, California, without further ado, Johnny H.
Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight. Glad to be sober. I want to thank the committee for allowing me the privilege of participating in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's always been my opinion, and I hope it always remains so, that is some type of a privilege to be allowed and come sit with you good people. I hope I don't ever get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous just because I was lucky enough to stumble into the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and get sober. I hope anything that I'm asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, I will treat it as some type of an extreme privilege that I surely really have no... I really have no right to be having in the first place. So I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what you think about it, but I love it. I mean, I kind of watch the countdown, and saw my old friend Howard over there. Howard had me at the Coon Supper. They tried to tell me that was Coon. But I was sitting next to the mayor of that little town, and he ate chicken. So somebody said to me, "Did you eat coon?" I said, "No, I ate chicken. If the mayor don't eat coon, neither do I, and I'm a guest there." Looked like cats to me. I don't know what it looked like to me. I'm glad to be here now. I'm really glad to be here, fully clothed and in my right mind. I tell you that for no particular reason other than the fact that the longer I stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. And I never want to forget that little over 39 years ago today, I was probably crawling around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. Now, because of a loving God, as he expressed himself through this program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it isn't necessary anymore for me to crawl around on my hands and knees like an animal. And if I don't get nothing else out of this deal at all, I guess I could live with that for a long time. Makes me feel good. I'd like to be able to stand here tonight without any type of blur of conscience whatsoever and tell you that's where alcohol took me to. Oh, I'd love to be able to tell you that. But you see, that's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to stumble into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm as sure as I'm standing here, if I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I've always been kind of a strange person. I really have. Weird is a better word for it, but I'm trying to be a little more sophisticated in my old age. But I was always kind of restless and irritable and discontent. I was always kind of... You know, I'm ill at ease all the time. I didn't quite understand what was going on. I didn't feel like all the people around me looked, and I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know then, as I know today, that those were the symptoms of the most deadly disease that's ever been known to mankind. That's killed more people in the 7,000 years of recorded history of it than anything that's ever been known to mankind. That's what I didn't know I had it. But you know, I always knew that there was something wrong with me. I don't know whether I was born alcoholic or not. It's totally immaterial to me how I got it, where it came from, if If I caught it off a toilet seat, however got it. I don't really make much difference to me. Thank God I discovered that I had it. It seemed like to me I was born needing an answer. Now, it's kind of hard to find an answer to a problem if you don't know what the problem is. It's just kind of strange deal. And I knew a lot about whiskey. Everybody in my family drank whiskey. They made it, and they drank it, and they do what people who make whiskey and drink it do. They used to gather up on Saturdays and beat each other up. That's what they did. They were Irish people. They didn't have any type of organized religion to hold their guilt down. I'll tell you that. They're crazy people. Man, I tell you, they steal each other's whiskey and each other's women and beat each other up, and whoever survived was the king for the week. I guess that's the way they worked the deal out. The strange thing about that is I understood it. I understood the violence. I understand that kicking and all that kind of stuff, like putting your foot in somebody's belly. It's almost like a spiritual experience. You know, it just lights you up all over. What I was never able to understand, and I feel they can't even understand it today, and it's how these same people who did that to one another would put their arms around one another on Wednesdays and say, "We love one another because we're family." And I guess way back there somewhere, I said to myself, if that's what love is, you can keep it. Because I don't ever remember ever uttering that word to another human being prior to coming into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or for a long time after I was here. It was not in my vocabulary. But I'm looking for a way out of this deal. A long time before I ever come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm looking for a way out. And I looked up one day and saw my grandmother. Now, my grandmother lived when she was 90 years old, and she never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette. Now, my grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal. I've been sober almost 38 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. I look at her and say, yeah, Granny, but there's a couple of times you should have taken a drink, for Christ's sake. I can tell you that. It made you feel better. But Granny was a magnificent old lady. They used a house for a war zone on the weekend, these crazy people did. And she'd get up on Sunday morning and step over the bodies and put her good dress on, which she had one. And she took off and she was gone for a couple hours. And while she was gone, something happened to her. And she came back a little lighter in her step and a little easier in her being. She kind of danced over these crazy people and cleaned them up and cooked for them and sang songs to Jesus. Now, I took a look at that and filed that in my keen alcoholic mind. Now, for you who are new in Alcoholics Anonymous, this is the only place in the world you're ever going to hear about the keen alcoholic mind. I'll guarantee you didn't hear about the keen alcoholic mind at Al-Anon meeting today. They don't talk about the keen alcoholic mind. They see the keen alcoholic got up last night and peed in the linen closet, but they don't talk about, they talk about how keen we are. We will. You ask us a question, we'll give you an answer. We may not know what the hell you're talking about, but we'll say something to you. Yeah. And then you see there was my grandfather. My grandfather was an entirely different deal. See, my grandfather used to take off whenever he had money. And he'd be gone until the money was gone. And he came back in various shapes and forms. They brought him back on a wagon one time. He'd been shot and stabbed and thrown off the second floor balcony of a whorehouse in Kansas City. Now, I thought, I could look at that and see Grandma's got the best deal. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist. Grandma ain't getting thrown off of wagons and down wells and stuff. So I made another fatal mistake. I thought, which is a bad thing for alcoholics, I thought that all I would have to do is go where my grandma goes and do what my grandma does, and I'd be like my grandma. I never knew then, as I know now, that I'm not like my grandmother. See, my grandmother's not alcoholic. I didn't know that. I didn't know that I was bodily and mentally different from my fellows. I had no way of knowing that. So I got up one Sunday morning and put my hand in my grandmother's hand and went with my grandmother because I wanted so desperately what Grandma looked like when she came back from that church place that she went to. And I sat in my grandmother's church with my grandmother on a Sunday morning a long, long time ago. And I waited for this magic thing to happen to me that happened to my grandmother. It happened to my grandmother and happened to the guy sitting next to her, but nothing was happening to me. And I don't know how I felt about that, but it took me a long, long time sober to learn a very simple truth, that there was nothing at all wrong with my grandmother's church. There was something wrong with the jackass sitting in it, me. But what I was doing in that church is what I did all my life. A futile attempt to capture something where it wasn't. I kept looking all my life for things out there to make me feel better in here. And not one time did I ever realize that there ain't enough nothing out there to make me feel good in here. That everything I have to come from the inside out. I didn't know that. A couple of weeks later, I'm sitting on the back porch of my grandpa's house with my grandpa. My grandpa's drinking whiskey out of a fruit jar. And my grandpa set his drink down and went somewhere, and I picked it up and took a drink of it. That's all it is. I just took a drink. The next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out there in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. I didn't know that. I didn't know that everybody who drinks alcohol doesn't get the same reaction from it that I do. I didn't know that. But alcohol was a wonderful thing. It went down inside of me, kind of stilled the screaming madness. It took me from the black pit of nothingness and stood me into the gray fringes of the business of living and installed in me some type of arrogance and said, "Damn you, world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here." That's what alcohol did for me. But that's not the thing that drove me into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. What got me was the thing that kicks in right behind that, that our book says is limited to alcoholics of my type. You see, once I ingest a drink of alcohol into my system, then and only then am I drinking to overcome a craving that's beyond all human understanding and beyond all human health. I didn't know that. That when I took a drink of alcohol, something happened to me that doesn't happen to most of the people who drink it. It triggers this phenomenon of craving Dr. Silkworth talked about in our book. And what happened to me for the next 20 years of my life every time I drank alcohol happened to me every time I drank alcohol. There was never any kind of a different pattern in there. Sometimes it took a little longer, sometimes it was a little quicker, but it always happened the same thing. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later they pulled me out from underneath a bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later I took a drink of alcohol, they pulled me out of a car in Compton and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. That's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just travel around. I went from reform school to reform school to junior penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I like nut house better. It's more macho. I mean, come on. If you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad, for Christ's sake. Don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous work a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I gave it everything I had out there, I'll tell you that. I threw everything into the battle of life and lost the fight and didn't even know what was whipping me. That was kind of hard. I didn't know because I'm sitting on a furlough from reform school. I don't know, I'm 10 or 11 years old drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine, which was my drink. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. There's a reason for that, too. It was the experimental stage of the Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. I'll tell you how bad that stuff was. It never saw a grave. It gets you. I'm drinking this stuff, and I don't know. It ain't quite getting me where I want it to take me. It ain't never quit working, but it ain't taking me where I want it to take me. And a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, "You ought to try these." And he gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, "What are those? Will they bother me if I take them?" Thank God they weren't X-Lax, that's all I can tell you. Now, we could probably have a whole new 12-step program called Laxatives Anonymous. I could be standing here tonight as the adult child of a laxative taker. I would have been functional, but Mother sat on the toilet all the time when I was small. Well, I hear stuff stupider than some of these things that masquerade as AA meetings. Work. That's all I can tell you. Thank God it worked. Because a couple of years later, I'm sitting on that same street corner on a furlough from another reform school. And I'm drinking this wine and I'm eating these pellets and they ain't quite taking me where I want them to take me. And a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and I ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. See, I live out there in the streets. And I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. And there's a reason for that, you see. I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, and I'm self-serving, and I got an ego bigger in this whole room. My entire lifetime was spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and for a long time after I was here, and maybe even a great deal of the time today, I really don't know, without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lived upon the face of this earth, I wasn't interested in you at all, unless you had something I wanted. Then when I got whatever it was that you had that I wanted, I cast you aside like so much trash, I went on about my business. That's the way I lived my life. Now, I didn't live my life like that one day, or one week, or one month, until the heat got on. I lived my life like that from my earliest recollection of life, until a long time after I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew no other way to live. The book says I'm selfish and self-centered. That's true in my case. And what happened to me happens to people like me who do things like that. When I came to in that cell in solitary confinement in that penitentiary, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But they should be gone. And I don't have any right to have any of them back just because I was lucky enough to get sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. Anything that's good and decent in my life is some type of an unearned gift from a God that I discovered sitting in meetings with you. It's not that I have a right to all these things because I'm sober. I don't have a right to nothing. I have a lot of things that have been unwarranted gifts from this magical God that I found sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, I can't take any credit for anything that happens to me since I've been good and decent, since I've been an Alcoholics Anonymous, because I can't take any credit for coming here. If I'd have known where I was coming, I wouldn't have come. That's very simple. I'm sitting in this penitentiary, and the reason I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is because the institution I was in let women come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, next month it'll be 38 years ago, to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around here ever since. I don't know why you came, it's totally immaterial to me. I moved in and sit down in the back row in what I lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. I don't want anybody to sit up front. Somebody might mistake me for an AA member, for Christ's sake. I remember looking up on the backboard. I saw two big A's, and I thought to myself, my God, I've wandered into an anti-aircraft brigade. I had this clown sitting next to me. I said, what is this? He said, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I sunk down in my seat. Gangsters weren't supposed to be hanging out with them winos. Been Gangsters Anonymous, or Over-Hip Anonymous, or Dope Fiends Anonymous. Oh, God. Dopey. Makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Macho. Makes addicts seem kind of candy ass, don't it? And I thought to myself, well, I'll wait for these women to get up and tell their racist stories. Now, you got to remember that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there weren't very many young, pretty girls in AA. If they were, they weren't sent up that penitentiary where I was at, I'll tell you that. These old gals got out to talk, and one of them said she'd drank for a long time. Hell, you could look at her and know she'd been somewhere for a long time. She said, I used to drink. I said, I'll bet you did. Bad stuff, too. See, I knew everything when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information. I know so damn much about what ain't true, I don't know what is true, and there I sit. And I tell you what's frightening to me today. I think about it a lot, because I go to a lot of meetings. Here I am, almost 38 years ago, sitting in a room. I'm sitting in this room, and I'm staring at the answer that I had sold my soul for. But I didn't recognize the answer because I didn't know what the problem was. Not at all. And I think my earliest days in Alcoholics Anonymous were the most confusing times of my entire lifetime. And if you did anything to me at all when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, you proved to me that I was not an alcoholic. Because I sit in your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous when you came in on those panels, and people would get up at podiums very much like this and say things like this. I used to drink. Now I don't drink anymore, and everything is just wonderful. Guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm not drinking either, and I'm crazy. I wish I was. If I could just be alcoholic, if it could just be that simple. But you see, there's something far more wrong with me than that. I'm as physically sober as a guy saying that. And I'm nutty in a fruitcake. And they'd say, get busy. Well, I equated busy with being in motion. I thought the faster you move, the smaller target you made. That's the way it's always been in my neighborhood. It'll still be that way when I go home. So I can tell you how to move fast here when nobody knows you're a member. Move quick. Pick up coffee cups. Ashtrays. Go back there and set an inventory point and die. That's what I did. And all that proved to me that I was not alcoholic, because these people said that all you got to do is not drink and get busy, and your life would just get wonderful. And here I am, nutty in a fruitcake, sitting in a meeting, doing everything they told me to do crazy. I didn't realize then, as I understand it today, what I was describing to myself and what they were describing and what I was hearing was about a drinking problem or about a problem with alcohol. I didn't realize that my symptoms were symptoms of a disease called alcoholism. The drinking is not my problem. Sobriety is my problem. I didn't know that. I didn't know that long and total periods of complete sobriety, complete absence of any type of chemical, serve no other purpose in my life except make my life so damned unbearable I can't stand it. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand any of that thing. So I just kept coming to your meetings and sitting in the back of your meetings and making fun of you. I couldn't understand what these people were doing. I was attracted to them, but I didn't understand them. I didn't understand why anybody in his right mind would get up on Sunday morning and give up his family and his whole day and drive 185 miles up those old back roads and talk to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to him. People like me who sat in the back row and made fun of him. I'll tell you how sick that is. Here I am sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home, and I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. The keen alcoholic mind at work. I didn't know what these people were doing. I didn't have a clue about what they were doing. Another reason I didn't understand them, you see, is because these people were givers. They were given a little just for the hell of giving it. And I'm a taker. Takers don't understand givers. Takers only understand takers. That's all they understand. That's all they ever hang out with. I didn't understand that. They were foreign to me. I never saw anybody like this in my life, unless it was my grandmother. And I didn't know what's going on there. One day I said to one of these people, hey, that's the way you talk to them, you know. Hey, he said, what do you want? I said, what do you get out of coming up here anyhow? You some type of a sicko? You'd like to look at the animals in the cages? What's your deal anyhow? He said, well, son, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it. I thought about my many hours on the psychiatrist's couch, and I tried to dig deeply into that statement. You ever notice how us geniuses and Alcoholics Anonymous are always looking for something that ain't there? That's what they do, you know. Oh, oh, oh. Wonder what Bill was trying to say. Oh, oh. Bill was trying to say what he said. Oh, oh. I have a guy sponsoring. Well, I just a guy sponsoring. I never will forget this guy. He'd sponsor him, and he'd come into the meeting. I'd be standing there talking to somebody. He'd walk up to me and say, hi, Johnny, how are you doing? I'd say, fine, Ray, why don't you get your cup of coffee and sit down over there, and I'll be over there in a minute. He'd look at me. He'd say, what do you mean by that? And I'd say, just get your cup of coffee and go sit down over there. I know that's kind of heavy, but try to grasp as much of it as you can. But that's the way I was when I was in AA. I didn't know what was going on. You know what I've learned in AA? This is not an opinion. I mean, you're getting a lot of opinions from a lot of people, but I'm going to give you a fact. This is a fact that's based on my experience of sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings on an average of 5 or 6 times a week for all these 30-some-odd years of my life. It's something I've learned here. My old sponsor, Norm Alpa, used to talk a great deal about crossing over some type of an invisible line from controlled to uncontrolled drinking. I don't have any qualms with that whatsoever. I believe my invisible line is 3 inches in my throat, but he believed that. But I'm here to tell you something. There is an invisible line in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't cross over it, you're going to die drunk. I don't care what your therapist tells you. I don't care what your sponsor tells you. I don't care what your best friend tells you. If you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't cross over that line, you're going to die drunk or go crazy or blow your brains out. And that's a little line. It's a very simple little line. It's a line where you got to cross over from being a taker to being a giver. And if you don't cross over the line and you're an alcoholic of my type, you're going to die drunk. There ain't no way to beat the deal. I've watched it too often around here. And it also backs up in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous. The book, Alcoholics Anonymous, makes the simple statement that selfishness and self-centeredness must be the root of all of our problems. We must be rid of it or it kills us. That's what it says. And selfish, self-centered people like me got to find some way in this world, on a part-time basis or maybe a full-time basis or maybe just once in a while, to give a little just for the hell of giving it, or I'm going to die drunk. That's as true today as it was my first day in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I don't know all this. I don't have a clue what's going on around here. I got up one Sunday morning a long, long time ago. I don't remember what Sunday morning it was. I don't know if it was going to be important to me. I didn't know it was the day I'd live my entire lifetime for. I had no way of knowing that everything that I'd ever done in my life had driven me right up to the gates of hell. I didn't know that that day I was going to go sit in a room and somebody was going to put the key into the gate and let me out of there. See, I didn't know I was in hell. And if I'd have known that, you'd have a different speaker here tonight. And the reason you'd have a different speaker, because if I'd have been armed with that information, I would have not have went to an AA meeting. I'd have went to the teacher or the preacher or my therapist or my counselor or my psychiatrist or whoever had been feeding me bad information all these years, whoever it was. But you see, I wasn't armed with that knowledge, so I got up where I always got up on Sunday morning, and I went and sat in an AA meeting. And a little guy that I knew who did 23 flat years in the penitentiary stood at a podium that day and told me something I've never forgotten. It makes more sense to me today than anything that I know. It'll make more sense to me tomorrow than anything I'll ever learn. He stood at this podium and he said, "You just don't have to live this way no more if you don't want to." He says, "You don't have to do it like this no more." Nobody had ever told me that. They had been telling me all my life, "Don't you drink, swallow, smoke, and shoot," but they never told me how to live without doing it. After the meeting, I went up to this little fellow and I said to him, "Les, how do you learn how to live?" See, I knew this guy. He was my manager when I was the star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates. I was 2 years star second baseman for that penitentiary. I put that on a resume once. Good God. You know what the guy said to me? He looked at me and he said, "Well, San Quentin." He said, "Where is that?" And I said, "That's up north near Stanford." He said, "That must have been a good school." I said, "Yes, it was." This little guy looked at me with all the compassion that people look at crazy people. And he smiled at me because he'd known me since I was a kid. He said, "Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. You go get that book. I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it." I guess he prayed real hard, that little fella, because I've been a student of the book Alcoholics Anonymous from that day to this day. And the only thing I've ever found in that book is me. I'm not looking for anything else. I'm not looking for a way to sober up the world or cure all of society's ills. I'm looking for a way to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with me and the loving God that made me and you. That's all. It seems like to me there's a strange phenomena that goes on in my life. It seems like to me that the closer I adhere to the principles that are written in that book, and the more willing I become to share that knowledge in this fellowship, just for the sheer joy of doing it, the more peaceful and the more comfortable and the more joyous I live with me and the loving God that made me.
It's the most fantastic thing that I know about. It's amazing. I don't know why I can't do it all the time. I feel so good all the time when I'm about my business, doing my Father's business. It's the most amazing thing that I know of. But you know, the selfishness and self-centeredness will creep back in from time to time, and I'll become restless and irritable and discontent. Going to a lot of meetings and doing all the things I want to think. You know, I've been sober a long, long time. And every time I've tried to make my life better, I've screwed it up. I just don't know what makes my life better. I know what makes my life good. You know the greatest single event that ever happened to me in my life is not coming to AA. Not at all. The greatest single event that ever happened to me in my life was not getting sober. I'm sober when I got it. I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. Physically sober. Greatest single event that ever happened, my children being born or my grandchildren being born or the good life I got today. Not the most single blessed event that ever happened in my life. The greatest single event that ever happened to me in my life happened to me sitting in a room with a man doing what our program of recovery says is a fifth step. I heard myself admit to this man that I was an alcoholic. And from way down deep inside of me, there came a freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. What I know right now is something I've known for over 30-some years of my life. I know exactly what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic, and I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I am not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something or other, I couldn't have your program. The reason for that is I separated me from you. I'm not like you. I'm better than you. I'm hipper than you. I'm slicker than you. But I'm not like you. But I became just like you, alcoholic. It became necessary for me to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type in 7,000 years of recorded history. This is the only thing that's ever worked for people like me. So I must do these things. Not to make me good or better. But I come waltzing out of that penitentiary on the 4th day of June, 1961, armed with only one thing. Program of Alcoholics Anonymous. With a dream that maybe someday you would allow me the privilege of coming and sitting with you. I never dreamed in my wildest imagination you'd ever ask me to do anything here. Because you see, I'm something that crawled out from underneath a rock. There was very few things in this world I haven't done to other people. And I didn't know what to do here. But all I wanted to do, I said to myself, if they let me do that, I'll do anything they ask me to do. Anything. And to the best of my ability, for the last 36 and a half years, that's the best thing I've done. I've done whatever Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. I'm not smart enough to figure anything out around here. I went home to see my mother that day. My mother fell off the step blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on a couch, said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. She said, fine, I think you should. Now, I'd like to be able to stand here and tell you one of them great success stories in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the one where I got sober, my wife got sober, my kids got sober, my parents got sober, my dog got sober, everybody sober. We're just wonderful little AA family. That's not my experience. My mother died drunk 3 years ago. You want to see how powerful you are, how much power you got over another human being? How much say-so you got about anything else? You sit around and watch somebody you love more than anything in the world come in and out of these meetings for 30 solid years while you sit here and stay sober and enjoy this good life. I watched my mother do that dance of death around here. My mother never did get sober. My mother got undrunk from time to time, but she never got sober. She got undrunk like a million people come in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous all the time, just getting undrunk. And my mother would get undrunk and come and sit in your meeting so she could no longer stand it, and she'd go out and drink again. And I watched that dance of death for 30 solid years until my mother died. And when my mother died, I sat there and held her hand. But I loved my little mother, and there was nothing between my mother and I whatsoever. And the moment my mother died, a minute before my mother died, if you'd have said to my mother, aren't you proud of your son, Johnny? Man, look what he's done. He's come out of them penitentiaries and them ghettos. He's quit them gangs. He's standing upright. He's supporting his wife. He's paying his kids. He's doing all he's supposed to. Aren't you proud of your son? He found out he was an alcoholic. You know what my mother would have told you? My mother said to you, my son's not alcoholic, for Christ's sake. His life got a lot better when he quit running around with a Mexican. You see, now you go talk to some of these psychobabble idiots who hang out in some of our discussion meetings, and they will tell you, your mama was in a denial. A denial is a river in Egypt. A denial is a flat lie, and anybody that tells you in denial is just telling you he's lying to you. This book, Alcoholics Anonymous, does not talk about denial. It talks about a delusion. There's a difference. A delusion to the delusioner is truth. They know no better. A denial is just a flat lie. My mother lived in a delusion that somehow, someday, she was going to control and enjoy her drinking. And it killed her. Amazing thing to me. I went to a meeting one night. I was standing there, a little skinny-legged guy ran up to me and said, I'm going to be your sponsor. I said, really? What's that? He said, well, I'm going to help you get things done that need to be done, Johnny. I said, okay. What do you want me to do? You know how you are, you're a little belligerent. He said, why do you ask me? I said, for Christ's sake, you just told me you were going to be my sponsor. He looked at me and said, Johnny, if I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours? I said, well, then what do you want me to do, Norm? He said, why don't you do what I do? I said, what is it you do? He says, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do, for Christ's sake. Yeah. See, what he did, he just threw down the gauntlet. See, I had to find out what he did. Now, that's a challenge, isn't it? You know, I just didn't want to show up at the meeting once in a while, and here I am, Norm. Because we're all a little better here than we are in most places. You know, we all got our little AA faces on. So I had to find out what he did in the world that I knew nothing about. See, I knew nothing about that world out there whatsoever. Nothing at all. I didn't know how to work. I never worked. I didn't know how to handle a family. I didn't have a family. I know how to do nothing. All I know is how to go sit in meetings at Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know how to do that right. I just sit there and talk to people. He yells at me, tells me to shut up. Won't let me get up and move around. So I don't even know about sitting in. I don't know nothing about AA meetings. I just don't know nothing about nothing. So I had to find out. I had to find out how he acted around his family. So I had to be there when he was around his family. I had to find out what he did on his job. So I had to be on his job with him. I had to find out what he does when he's in a restaurant. So I had to be in restaurants with him. I had to find out what he did on a golf course. So I had to be on a golf course with him. I had to find out what he did in his car because I had to be in his car with him. And I had to see, I'd test him all the time. I used to call him up in the middle of the night just to see if he'd answer the phone. I didn't want anything. I'd say to him, Norm, little things like this. Norm, he'd say, what do you want, jackass? Some of us have to work tomorrow. I'd say, Norm, my program ain't working, Norm. He'd say, try ours. But he never just let it go at that. He'd say, jackass, your program never did work. Which is true. My program don't work. Hell, if my program worked, what the hell do you think I'd be doing in Memphis, Tennessee on a Saturday night? I'd be somewhere. I got a little red-headed woman that I'm dating in California. She's a lot softer than he is, I'll tell you that. Hey, my program got me crawling around a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity at the ripe old age of 27 years old. My program. That's my program. Yeah. But see, your program don't work either. If your program worked, what the hell are you doing here? The reason I'm here is because our program worked. This ain't mine. Not at all. All I got to do is follow the simple directions around here and follow the people who went before me, like my dear friend Howard. People know what they're doing here. They've been sober for a period of time. They're much more important to me than somebody's got one day. These people have been keeping the doors open for people like us so we have some place to come to.
If it was up to people like me, there wouldn't be an AA. These people are there pudging that trapdoor door. So you people ought to really start to realize that about these people who are sitting in your meeting. They're the ones that made it possible for your rusty butts to be sitting in these seats tonight. Not somebody that's been stumbling in out of AA for the last 10 or 12 years, for Christ's sake. I may think the newcomers may be really important to Alcoholics Anonymous, but the old-timers are the lifeblood here. And you better get it in your head. What the hell? If you can't make fun of newcomers, what the hell good are they anyhow? My sponsor used to make fun of me. I'll tell you that. Oh, he was cruel. You know what he said to me? Go to work. I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, W-O-R-K, work. Simple, isn't it? And went to work. You know somebody stole my first paycheck? You want to hear somebody scream? Listen to a thief when they get stolen from. Well, I ranted and raved and hollered and jumped. I'd have caught that guy. You have another talker here tonight. There's a lot of things that happened to me. I couldn't drive a car when I got sober because I didn't have a driver's license. My driver's license has been to 1946 for the rest of my natural life. So my sponsor told me, then you won't drive a car for the rest of your natural life. I said, why not? He says, citizens like me have a right to be protected from jerks like you. Me had answers for everything. Mean man he was. So I used to have to call him up every once in a while and ask him to take me to meetings. Norm, what do you want? Norm, I know you're going to talk over this meeting over in Santa Ana tonight, and would you drive by here and pick me up, Norm, please? I would like to go to the meeting. Okay. Be by there at 6 o'clock. Be ready. Stand on the street corner. I ain't waiting for you. Okay, Norm. It was a hot July night. It gets hot in California. We were going to this little meeting over there. It was smoky, and that's when everybody smoked. But everybody was bad then. That's just... Not you good people, but... This was a little one-car garage hooked onto a house, and it was everybody smoked. I mean, it was so smoky you couldn't see the speaker. And it was hot, and I knew it was hot. I thought, well, if it's hot, you know, I get one of them brilliant ideas, bad deal. If you're new and you got an idea, if you're new and you've got a plan, I'll bet it's a doozy. If you really want to know how exciting your plan is, find Howard after the meeting and tell him your plan. He probably deserves a good laugh. So I tell Norm, but I put on my new tank top and my new shorts and my new thong, slick back my hair, put my shades on, sit on the street corner, waited for my sponsor. Old Norm drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. If I'd have caught old Norm that night, I'd have killed him. But I waited until he got home from that meeting, and so I called him up. I said to him, Norm! He said, what do you want, jackass? Some of us have to go to work tomorrow. He always said that to me. Even when I was working, he told me that. And I said, Norm, you left me standing on the street corner. He said, that's right. I said, why, Norm? He said, I want to ask you a question. Well, that changed the whole conversation. I said to him, what do you want to know? As if he needed to know anything from me, you know. He said, would you go to church dressed like that, Johnny? And I said, no, I won't. He said, you ain't going to my church dressed like that either. Hi. And then it got heated. Because I said to him, how come you yell at me in meetings, make me shut up? How come you make me sit still and don't wander around? And he said, Johnny, that's very simple. If you want to go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, you don't want to listen, that's your business. He says, you ever stop to think that maybe somebody else does? And I said, no, I haven't. Why? He says, I didn't think so. selfish, self-centered people like you don't ever think about anybody but yourself. He said, if I was you, but I'm not you. He said, I would sit in every meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous I go to, and I would sit there from the time they hit the gavel till they said amen. I said, why? He said, because one of these days, Johnny, you're going to be hanging around out there in that world, it's going to be coming down a little salty. And you're going to need to have heard everything you've ever heard in an AA meeting. I can't tell you the number of times that I've been out there riding around in the world, caught up in some of my own self-centeredness, with no ability to pray, no ability to turn it over, none of all them say stuff you hear around here. When you're crazy, you don't do that. And the only thing that's ever protected me is something that I've heard. Very grateful I am that the moment I was supposed to hear what I was supposed to hear, that some self-centered asshole who couldn't sit still for 3 more minutes didn't jump up and have to run back to the bathroom or see their friends hanging out in the back of the room. How very grateful I am. If that's true, you probably have another speaker here tonight. I don't want to ever stand between anybody and what they're supposed to hear in an AA meeting, so I sit down and sit still and pay attention to what goes on. But I go to meetings like that, too. That's the type of meetings I go to. That's what my home group does. My home group sits down. You don't find any of them jackasses hanging around or wandering around in the back getting coffee when that meeting's going on. Because they're there for the AA meeting. I don't know what they're there for. The social hour, hanging out till the dance starts, or what goes on there. Sometimes I feel when I'm talking to one of these banquets that I'm just the fill-in between the dinner and the dance, for Christ's sake. Why people come, I really don't know. My sponsor drilled that into my head. He wasn't quiet or kind or generous about it. He said, you're going to do this damn stuff or you're going to die, fool. And more important than that, you may kill somebody else. Oh. Well, he was fantastic. I remember one time I was at a meeting with him, and he had a little coffee break like we had here, and I ran back to a literature table. And I'm back there scumming through something to gain more knowledge. And the guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, Johnny, and I said, yes. He said, you man, I heard you talk the other night over there, so-and-so. He said, do you realize you're a miracle? I said, really? What was it that brought about that idea in your mind? Just, what was it I said? You know how humble we are. You know. And he filled me full of this hot air, and I took over with that egotism and got all swelled up and just kind of floated back into my seat next to Norm, stared out the window looking for my spaceship. I know I'm at that star up there, and sitting there, and I'm goofy. And we're on our way home going that night. We're in a car. We're on the freeway, and old Norm's looking at me, and I'm staring out the window. You say, what's the matter with you, jackass? You smoking that stuff? I said, Norm, I don't think you're going to understand this, but I'm a miracle. He didn't understand it. He slammed on the brake, damn near ran into the divider, and screamed at me. He said, you're what? I said, I'm a miracle, Norm. He said, where do you get this nonsense, Johnny? I said, the guy just told me that in the meeting. He said, jackass, you're not a miracle. Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle. You're just a small part of it. Huh. Yeah. Now, I really don't know what that does for all you miracles in the group. But I can tell you what it's done for me. It kept me small enough to stay here. Could you possibly understand what an egotist like me would do if I thought I was a miracle? You can let your imagination soar. I'd probably be hiring some Greyhound buses to take us all back to Waco to do it right this time. I have that type of an ego. I have no doubt about that. That's why I have a sponsor who's stronger in my head. That's why I have to go to a lot of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know what type of an egotist I am. I know what type of a sick brain I've got. I know that. I have to have people who keep doing that to me. Because I just get so swollen up that I'm no earthly use to anybody. It's just an amazing thing to me.
But there's many, many things that's happened to me since I've been sober and alcoholic. I used to ride around with an old man who was more father, probably the only father I've ever known in Alcoholics Anonymous. The guy's name was Chuck. And he, to all intents and purposes, he was my papa. And I loved him probably more than I've ever loved anything or anybody in my life before or since. But ever love him. And he used to treat me like a father treats a little son. And I'd say things to him. You know, I'd just try to mimic him. You know how you are when you're new, you're mimicking your sponsor. And I always got it wrong. And he'd say things to me very kindly, like a father would say to his son, "That's not the way I said it, son." And I'd, "Oh, shit." So after a while, I'd just sit over in the corner and watch him. And so one night, I was back at the literature table again. Bad place, literature table. And I picked up this pamphlet that I knew he could not argue with. It was the literature. Prove literature. On the literature table. You couldn't argue with that, could you? Nope. So we're on our way home from this meeting. He's driving his big old car, and I'm sitting there, and I said to him, "Papa?" And he said, "What do you want to know, son?" I said, "Can I read this to you, Daddy? This is something. I just think this is so wonderful." He said, "What is it?" I said, "Why we were chosen." He said, "Hold it. What makes you think we're chosen?" I said, "It says right here." He said, "We're not chosen, Johnny." He said, "We're all God's kids. If I am, you are, and if you are, I am." He says, "He makes the rain to fall on the just as well as the unjust." And so I said to him in my little smartness, "Well, then how come I'm sober? If I'm not special in God's eyes, how come I'm sober? I know people who are far better people than I'll ever be who will never stay sober. Why is that?" He smiled at me. He says, "Son, that's very simple." He says, "You've come to understand you're one of God's kids and you act like it." And I said to him, "What do God's kids act like, Pop?" "I don't know." He said, "Well, they just wander around in the world. They try to help God's kids get things done that need to be done. And they do it for free and they do it for fun." Isn't that an amazing thing? And so I watch. I watch around here. I watch God's children at play in Alcoholics Anonymous. I watch that old man that I love more than anything in the world until he was physically no longer capable of doing it. Get in his car night after night after night and come out and sit amongst God's kids and try to help get things done that need to be done right here with you. I watch him weekend after weekend after weekend get in that old car and drive to that airport and get in them planes and go out and try to help God's kids get things done that need to be done. I love that old man. And if he ain't one of God's kids, I don't want to be one. I just don't want to be. If that's not what God's kids are, then I don't want to be one. Then there was another man, my sponsor, Norm Alpe, who was just like him, my first sponsor. He did the same thing. He did the same thing night after night after night. He came and sat with you, and he did what you asked him to do, and he got in them airplanes, he got in them cars. He did it at his own expense. He got no pay for it. This is not an occupation. This is an advocation. To add money to it would only slimmer it and make it funny or something. They did it time after time after time. And Norm Alpe's not one of God's kids. I don't want to be one either. I'm just sorry. I just don't want to be one. And then there's my current sponsor. I've had for the last 14 years since old Norm died. A guy by the name of Clancy. And if Clancy's not one of God's kids, I don't want to be one either. Clancy does. I watch Clancy closer than anybody on the face of this earth watches him. I sit with him every Wednesday night at a meeting. I have lunch with him every Wednesday. I watch him every night. And the reason I watch him, it's not because he's Clancy or I want to see him fall. I watch him to see what he does because I know I have to do that. He's ahead of me. My sponsor is sober longer than I am, or he's busier than I am. That's the only criteria I have for a sponsor. They got to be sober longer than me. They got to be busier than I am. Because I'm one of them type of people that if you ain't doing it, I ain't going to do it either. I'm sorry. I mean, if you're just laying out there once a week, I'm going to lay out once a week. That's what I'm going to do. I mean, if you got time for all this other stuff, I'll find time for all this other stuff, too. But I ain't got time, so I got to watch him. You know, no matter what I want to do, I can't call him up and say, "Oh, no, Clancy. Clancy, what? Oh, I got to go to Memphis this weekend, Clancy. I'm so tired, I ain't got time to talk to you. I'm on my way to Portland, Maine." Oh. How would you like to have one of them guys say, "Oh, I wouldn't go if I was you. I don't do stuff like that." Glad you're one of God's kids, too.
And when I die, and I'm probably going to die, there's a lot of people who are trying to hurry the process along from time to time. But I think a lot of people I sponsor have secret meetings trying to figure my demise from time to time. And when I get to wherever I'm going, if there ain't people like Chuck Chamberlain and Norm Alpe and Clancy Emerson and old friend Howard down there and people like that and Louise and Mary and all the people I know them in, but if they're not people like that, I don't think I want to go there. Because if they're not there, then I'm back in hell. Because before these type of people came into my life, before people like you came into my life, I lived in absolute and total hell. If hell's any hotter than where I was, I hope I don't ever go there. But since I've been with you, I have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of living. I live a way that people find it hard to believe that I live this way. Do you know I live in a world when most of the time I don't want anything for myself whatsoever? Can you imagine a selfish, self-centered egotist like me living in a world where I want nothing for myself whatsoever? It's the most amazing thing that I know of. I live from time to time in periods of time in absolute and total peace. And the thing I'm doing is that when I'm doing that, I'm busy in AA. I'm busy sponsoring people and going to meetings and going to talk and do whatever I'm asked to do here. It's the most amazing thing. And as I look back on it, I've lived an absolute total of peace for periods of time. And what is the great blessing for alcoholics? All I've ever wanted to do in my entire life, what I saw in my grandmother's eyes when she came back from church is what I wanted. My grandmother was at peace with her and her God and the people about her. When I'm sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what's happening to me. When I'm around you and I'm busy being more concerned about your welfare than I am my own, I'm sure I'm in the same place my grandmother was when she came back from church. I'm at one with my God. I can't tell you every meal I've eaten has been a banquet. Every day I've lived out there, I've lived on the sunny side of the street because I'm a human being. I have screwed up my life from time to time by reaching out for something that I shouldn't have and trying to do something I shouldn't be doing. Trying to figure out what it is I need to make my life better just screws it all up because I don't know what makes my life better. I really haven't got a clue. I can't run my own life, but it isn't necessary for me. My ego does not demand that I run my own life. My ego does not demand for me to say, I don't really need to do that. I don't really need to do that. I don't have to listen to that person. I know exactly what I have to do. I don't have to do that. My ego doesn't demand that. All my ego does is just sits around in these meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what you do, I do. I go to work. I go home, I get cleaned up, and I go to an AA meeting. And when the phone rings, I pick it up and answer it exactly the way my papa taught me to answer it. If the date's open, it belongs to you. Because I belong to you. Every living thing I have, I owe to you. Everything. The way I feel inside, the way I'm going to feel inside. My baby daughter, the one I love more than anything else, she's 2 years sober at Alcoholics Anonymous. Every once in a while, she got the cutest little grandson you ever saw in my life. That little boy, he just absolutely tears my heart out. Comes over to my house and tears the house up. Puts gum in my shoes. There's just candy stuck all over the place. And it wasn't me, Grandpa. Oh, who was it? You were the only one here. It must have been Mom. My life is very good. You've orchestrated a fantastic life for a person like me. It's an amazing thing, that when I lay my head down on the pillow, the nightmares are no longer there. You know that if I died right this moment, my life is current. I am current with everybody that I know. I don't, unless I've offended you on the way into the meeting, I don't know any amends that I know of. My financial affairs are all in shape. My alimony is up to snuff. And life is really very good. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I pray, God, that somewhere along the line you'll stay here long enough to discover what's wrong with you. Because I guarantee you that most of the people coming to Alcoholics Anonymous today don't know what's wrong with them. I didn't.
Most of the people come to Alcoholics Anonymous today, some fool has told them that they have a problem with alcohol. Some fool has told them they have a problem with drugs. If alcohol or drugs is your problem, just quit drinking and using drugs. That's all. And then you don't even need to be sitting in these dumb meetings listening to these dumb speakers from California, for Christ's sake. Or these dumb people from North Carolina. Or none of these people. You have to listen to them at all. All you can do is just go on about your merry way. If your life is so good, keep on doing it. A long time ago, a guy gave me a little saying that I love. This guy, I love this guy. He knew that I'd love it. He gave me this little saying. And the saying was so good that he forgot what it was he said. And after 9 years of sobriety, he went out in the streets. He's been out there for the last 13, 14 years, going crazy. Another guy that I know that I sponsored knew I loved this thing so much that he had a plaque made up for me. And I hang it over the door of my house, and I see it every time I leave the door. I always see it. See it when I sit there in the morning and have my coffee. And the little saying is this. And it's the most profound piece of truth that I've ever known. And the thing is this, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. Isn't that deep? That means exactly what it says. I'm sorry, there is no hidden psychological evaluation there. You're going to have to go tear it apart and run to your therapist with you. It means what it says. That means if you're sitting in this meeting and you got a football in your gut and you're restless and you're irritable and you're discontent, keep on doing what you're doing. You're going to keep getting what you're getting. You cannot think your way into right living. You've got to live your way into right thinking. Okay. The other side of that coin is this. If you're sitting in this meeting and your heart is peaceful and joyous and you're with the people you love and God is right and in His heaven, then you should keep on doing what you're doing, because you're surely going to keep on getting what you've been getting. Now, I don't know about another living soul who lives upon the face of this earth. I don't live inside of anybody else's skin. I'm sorry. I only know that I'm going to keep on doing what I've been doing, because I sure do like what I've been getting. God bless you. Thank you. Hey!